Track session number 19926, reel 1.
Bharat Xavier, reel 1. Where were you born, please?
In Hong Kong.
Which year was this?
1920.
Could you tell me, please, something about your family background?
My grandfather was a captain in the Portuguese Navy.
What was his name?
I only know his surname, Sarrazola.
And your father and mother?
My father is Eduardo Xavier.
So he was the son of the Portuguese?
No, my mother's side. My mother is Benedicta de Oliveira Sarrazola.
And did your mother and father and grandparents come from Hong Kong or Macau?
No, my grandparents come from Portugal.
And did you know any of your grandparents?
I only knew my grandma.
On which side?
On my mother's side.
What did your father do for a living?
He was a retired chief bank clerk in the French bank in Hong Kong.
Was your mother a housewife?
Or? Yes, my mother was a housewife.
Where did you go to school?
St. Joseph's College and La Salle College.
What kind of an education did you have there?
Well, next to matriculation.
Did you consider it to have been a good education or not?
Well, I would say fair.
What was discipline like at the school?
Very strict. Very, very strict.
And who were the kind of, what kind of teachers did you have?
They were the Jesuit brothers.
So they were priests?
Yes.
Did you have physical punishment?
Well, I did, yes.
For what?
Well, for fighting in school.
Did you do a lot of fighting at school?
Well, I like boxing and I used to do a lot of fighting in school. I was caned for that, though.
Did you resent it?
No.
Do you think it was fair punishment?
Yes. Accept it like a man.
How many strokes did you get?
6.
Where?
My backside.
And what did you think of the teachers? Did you like them or
dislike them? Oh, yes. Yes, I respect them.
Were you good at your lessons or not?
Some subjects I was pretty good and some not very good.
What were your best subjects?
English and maths.
Was that English language or English literature?
English, well, in general.
And what was life like for you in Hong Kong at that time?
I had a wonderful life.
Why?
My parents were well off. We had servants.
How many servants did you have?
3 servants.
What did they do?
One was a cook or a chef. The other one does miscellaneous jobs. And one was an armor looking after the house, doing the ironing and so forth.
And where did they come from?
They're from Hong Kong.
Do you remember their names?
No.
Did they live in?
No.
So did you have a happy boyhood or not?
Oh, yes.
What was your address in Hong Kong?
763 Nathan Road, top floor.
Was it a flat?
Yes.
And when you were at school, did you have any ambitions?
Well, I always wanted to join the Navy or to be a policeman.
So how old were you when you finished your schooling?
I was about 16 or 17.
So that would have been in 37 or 38?
That's right.
What did you do on leaving school?
Well, I applied different jobs in Hong Kong. And I saw an advertisement in the South China Morning Post asking for police officers or applicants to join the Shanghai Police. I applied for that job, and I got a letter requesting me to go to Shanghai for an interview.
Did you go?
Yes, I did.
What happened?
Well, I went through the selection board and went for an examination and so forth, and they told me to wait, and they will let me know. That was in the late 1938. I received a letter from the Shanghai Municipal Police, the Commissioner of Police, saying that my application to join the police was accepted. And if I could return to Shanghai and report to the headquarters there for training on certain day, I can't remember the exact date, which I did so. I think that was sometime in August when I went to Shanghai in 1939. And after a month training in Shanghai, the war broke out.
What was the training in Shanghai like? Can you describe it?
Well, it's like a police training school. They teach us how to fire arms, like revolvers, the 38 and the rifle. And we had to study the law there. I was there for about a month and a half when the war broke out, and the Commissioner of Police turned around to everybody, not only to me, said, "England expects every man to do his duty. Would any one of you like to volunteer or to join the forces?" Well, I didn't at that time. I said, "I'll give some consideration before I decide." After about a fortnight, I decided that I'll join the Navy. And at that time, HMS Petrel, a river gunboat, was stationed there. And I made an appointment to see the skipper, or the ship's captain. And he took me around the ship and all that, and told me what the Navy had does and all that. And I said, "Well, I would like to join the Navy." He said, "Fair enough, but you have to go to Hong Kong for it. Go back to Hong Kong." So I went back and saw the commissioner. He said, "Yes, we will release you from the service. And after the war, if you want to come back to Shanghai," he says, "and rejoin the police, you can." But instead of me signing as a volunteer, I signed in as a regular for 8 years.
Why did you do that?
Well, I liked the Navy. I was in Hong Kong for about, I joined the Navy in 29th of December 1940. I was stationed in HMS Tamar. Then, it's not a barracks, but it was the ship, something like the Mayflower. I was attached to that ship.
You mean it was an actual ship?
Oh, yes. Yes.
Where was it anchored?
It's anchored at the bay. The Bay Area. And that's where I commenced my training as a signalman, a boy signalman.
Can you describe what the training was like there?
was quite tough. Mostly, it's not so much drilling or anything like that, but dealt with communication.
Which communications?
Signals.
Was this flags or radio or what?
No, flags and helio. And also they taught us how to decode messages.
What did you think of the quality of the training that you were getting?
Very good. Very good.
Did you have any problems with the training?
No. No.
How did the people in charge treat you?
Well, they treated me very well because my spelling was very good. They said to me, you might as well go in for coding and decoding messages, and that to type all the messages out. As I've just pointed out, that my spelling was very good. Some of the service blokes, they couldn't spell their own name. So I accepted that, and from there onwards, I carried on as a signalman.
Where did the other boys come from?
From England.
All of them?
In the signals, yes. All over England. What part of England, I don't know, but it's from all over England.
How did you get on with them?
Well, fine, fine.
Did you have any particular friends?
Yes. Yes, a leading signalman, Pony Moore.
What was his name?
Pony Moore. We call him Pony, but his surname is Moore. Signalman Moore.
Where did he come from?
Well, if I can recall his accent, I think he's from the north. I'm not sure.
What happened to you next?
Well, we start. I do normal duties there in Hong Kong. After 6 months in Hong Kong, they sent me to Singapore. I was on board HMS Thracian.
What kind of a ship
was
this?
It's a destroyer.
So this was your first actual ship?
Yes.
Can you describe the ship?
Well, I think it's got a 3 or 4 inch gun, that's about all. It's an old tub, we call it an old tub.
What were your living conditions like in the ship?
Good. Can't complain.
What did you sleep in?
Bunks.
Not hammocks?
No.
What was the food like?
All right. General.
And what was your job in the ship?
Signalman.
So?
I didn't do any coding and decoding. It was hand signals and helio.
And what duties was the ship carrying out based at Singapore?
Well, we had 4 shifts. Morning, mid, afternoon, and evening, or all night shift like.
Did you mind that?
No, I enjoyed it. Messages coming all over. You know, about the Japanese shipping movements, the weather report. I had to type that all out. Even on board the ship, I'd done all that.
So this was a time when the war was going on in Europe?
In Europe.
But not in the Far East?
Not in the Far East, no.
Did you think that it was going to come in the Far East?
Well, we knew that.
How did you know?
Well, by the messages. There was an Australian, I think he was a lieutenant, in the Australian Navy or in the Royal Navy, I'm not sure. He was the chief intelligence officer there. He was also recording all the Japanese ship movements in the Far East. And some of his messages came through us.
Had you met Japanese before the war?
No. But when I returned to Hong Kong from Singapore after my training, I was, informed by my superior officer to beware of Japanese intelligence, mostly in the Wan Chai area, where they had the beer halls and the gay girls there. And also, most importantly, was a Eurasian boy we had to be very careful of. He works for the Japanese intelligence. He works in the Japanese embassy in Hong Kong. His name is Richards. Got to be very careful of him. He tries to get information from us, signalmen, especially the signalman that's in the coding office.
Did you ever meet this Richards?
No.
How would he approach the seamen?
Well, in these Japanese halls and in the beer halls and all that. It's very near the China Fleet Club. Because we usually on off duty, we go to the China Fleet Club.
So you were told this when you were in HMS Tema?
Yes, yes.
Coming back to Singapore, any other memories of Singapore when you were there with the Thracian?
Well, I remember the Raffles Hotel. I used to go there in civilian clothes and dance with the Singapore girls. That was a high-class hotel then, at that time.
Which did you prefer, Singapore or Hong Kong?
Hong Kong, of course.
Out of loyalty or?
Out of loyalty, yes.
What other memories have you got of serving in Thracian?
Well, I've got a chief petty officer there by the name of Yeoman Inks, chief petty officer. He was a great guy. He used to lecture me and advise me what to do and what not to do.
What type of advice did he give you?
Well, as regards signals and behave myself when I'm ashore and keep the name of the Navy up to scratch.
Did you behave yourself
ashore? Oh, yes. Yes.
Did you ever get into trouble?
No. Kept well out of trouble.
Did any of your shipmates get into trouble?
Well, when they go ashore, they usually go to the beer hall and they start fighting and all that. I kept well away from it.
What happened next?
In Singapore?
Yes.
Well, nothing much. Life was quite simple there. We stayed in the ship most of the time.
So this is in 1941?
Yes, the beginning of 41.
So did you make any long trips in HMS Thracian?
We went to Ceylon. I think we called it Ceylon, but there was a naval base in Ceylon.
To Trincomalee?
That's right, Trincomalee. There. And I stayed at the White Angel Club. That's how we while away our time playing table tennis and play cards. That's about all we did in Ceylon because it was pretty dead. We had to, when we ever want to go ashore, you've got to take a motor launch to go ashore because the ships can't go alongside there in Ceylon. They call Sri Lanka now, isn't it?
Yes. Mm. So what happened when the Japanese attacked in the Far East? What happened to you?
Well, I just came off duty. But prior to that, we were all told what to expect. All shore leave was cancelled on the 28th of November. Things were getting so hot, message was coming in all night from the Admiralty. And we're all told to stand by.
You mean Pearl Harbor didn't come as a surprise?
Oh, no, we knew that. We were anticipating Japanese attack on us any time.
What happened to you on the day that Pearl Harbor occurred?
Well, I just came off duty and was, I was in my bunk bed. And all of a sudden, the siren went. Six Japanese fighter planes dived over Kaitak Airport. They dropped the bombs and they took off again. That was about quarter to eight, December the 8th, 7:45. And they made a round trip, I believe, and they went straight for the dockyard. And they dropped several bombs at the dockyard. What damage they did, I don't know. Unfortunately, at that time, HMS Moth was a gunboat. She was in a dry dock for repairs. But HMS Sikala, Thracian and Thanet, and the minesweeper Barlight was all out at Aberdeen Naval Base. So the Japanese at that time didn't know that. They went for the dockyard thinking that the ships were at the dockyard in Hong Kong. Mind you, Aberdeen is also Hong Kong, but it's Aberdeen Harbor, another naval base there. And all hell let loose then. I was told to stand by on the 8th of December. I did nothing. Everything was dead. Battle headquarters was functioning about 300 yards away from us. That was when they took all these classified messages, like cipher and so forth. And we were billeted, or I was billeted as a China Fleet Club, told to stand by, wait for instructions. Nothing was done. And I'm sure it was on the 12th of December, Petty Officer Mitchell, called at the China Fleet Club and said, "I want you." I said, "Fair enough." Back at the dockyard. And there was quite a few officers there, like Signal Bosun D.M. Mitchell, Lieutenant Commander R.S. Young, Commander Kirby. He said, "Signalman, stand by for the evacuation of troops on a ferry boat." I said, "Ferry boat?" They said, "Yes, ferry boat. We have commandeered from Star Ferry a staff ferry boat to evacuate our troops from Kowloon to Hong Kong." And that was about 6 in the evening when I was called up for that. I said, "Fair enough." And about 8 o'clock in the evening, a sub-lieutenant from HMS Cornflower, RNVR, he's an RNVR officer. He said, "Come on, son, we're going to the ferry now. We're going over to Kowloon to pick up our troops and bring them back to Hong Kong. Your call sign was ferry number 5. But do not mention the name ferry, just call sign number 5. And when you proceed to the dockyard signaling station, just flash out ferry number 5 approaching." No one must know this call sign. I said, "Fair enough." So we went over. I think it was about 8:45 that evening. We went alongside. Our instruction was to go to Peninsula Hotel. That was our rendezvous point to pick up the troops. When we arrived there, at Star Ferry Wharf in Kowloon, where there was a lot of Canadians and Royal Scot troops and Indians, some of Indian troops there waiting. They said, "You can't go to the Peninsula Hotel as instructed because the Japanese are all around there." So the officers turned around and said to me, "Well, is the ship loaded?" I said, "Yes." You know, I saw that all the men was in the ferry. He said, "Let's proceed back to the dockyard." Well, I proceeded back to dockyard, but whilst we were approaching dockyard, I flashed out the signal, number 5 approaching. And they all, the signal, you know, from the dockyard, signal received, proceed, which gave me the clearance. So I went back to Hong Kong with all the troops. We disembarked. I went back to my place where I first met. There was quite a few officers there and all that. They said, stand by for further instructions. So I turned around to the officer. I said, excuse me, sir. I said, I had nothing to eat since all morning. He said, oh. He said, we didn't know that. So they instructed the cook there, you know, to give me a good meal, so which I did. I had a good meal, but told me to stand by for further instructions. At about 11 o'clock, the same petty officer came up to me, said, we have to do another run. He said, back to the same spot, to Kowloon, to pick up what are the remains of the remnants of the troops that's left behind. Well, we did. Armed with a 45 and a rifle, jumped on the ferry and went to Kowloon with the same crew. When we arrived there, they were shouting, screaming. Chinese women say, rape, or don't kill my baby and all that. And they were firing.
Who was firing?
The Japanese was firing at the women. Probably they didn't know we was there. And some of the troops turned around and said to the skipper, that was a lieutenant in the Navy, RNVR. And he said, well, we can't stop. So we picked up about 60 or 70, that's about all. And we couldn't stay there no more than 3 minutes. We had to get out. And it was terrible, terrible. It's like hell. So we went back to Hong Kong. When I got in the basin, went back to this fleet accommodation barracks, all the officers, top-ranking officers, including Commodore Collinson, was there. And he says, come here, son, my petty officer said to me,